Welcome to The Listening Way, a place for gentle conversations on how listening shapes our way of being in the world. I'm Dusk from The Listening Squad, where we believe that every person needs to be heard. The Listening Way is made on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and Bunurong land. We acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander custodians of this land and their deep wisdom and practice of listening. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. In this episode, we explore the listening way of Nathan Scolaro. Nathan is the editor of Dumbo Feather magazine and head of storytelling at Small Giants Academy. Nathan's way of being in the world is hearing people into truth through meaningful conversations and storytelling. In this episode, Nathan shares with us some beautiful stories about listening with his grandma and being listened to by the land. It's such an honour to hear these stories, and I'm so thankful to share them with you today. Welcome, Nathan. Thank you so much for being here. I'd love to start by hearing from you one of your strongest memories of listening, and that might be being listened to, needing to be listened to, or listening to someone else or yourself.
Oh, it's so strong. Wow, it's amazing. I go straight to my grandparents' dinner table in a small town in country Western Australia. And I come from a family of farmers. So they're dairy farmers. It's a small house on a lot of land, a lot of green pastures and rolling hills. And it's quite a small house built in, I would say, 50s or the 60s. It's a very small little brown table. And I'm sitting there with my grandmother, who has an incredibly special place in my heart, as often our grandparents do. And I'm listening to her and laughing with her and going deeper and deeper into conversation with her long into the night. So usually this is after, you know, we'd often have sleepovers at our grandparents, and maybe one of my brothers was with me, but she's just fed the whole family. Everyone's gone to bed, and it's just me and Nana, and maybe my brother, my younger brother Damon as well. He loved the chats, and she was always right up for it. She'd make, you know, the cup of Milo, she'd bring the biscuits out, and she knew we were going to be there for like a good 5 or 6 hours, and we were so excited as well, because, you know, you get to stay up, but it was actually the conversation that was the most exciting part, because it was comfort conversation. We'd talk about things that were really familiar. So we're talking about family. She would ask about things that were going on in my own life. Perhaps she was trying to investigate what was, you know, how things were in my own family, but she'd often ask things about what was happening in our home, and, you know, nothing. We didn't have a difficult childhood, but she wanted to know as much detail and richness and color in our lives. And she's a beautiful, conversationalist, and she's also very humorous. She had a wicked sense of humor, and so I just have these memories of cackling with her, you know, like the Milo was coming out of my nose almost from how much she used to make us laugh. And she was great at asking, so there was that lightness of it. She was also great at asking the deep questions that got to the heart, that really spoke to the soul. And that came very naturally to her, and me being able to receive those and answer those questions came very naturally to me. So we have a very fortunate relationship in her and I make up our personality, our chemistry, in that we could reach and access those deep places very easily and very comfortably, and it was fun for us. It was comfort food. I remember it just being like, oh, what a way to, you know, she'd already made something amazing, of course. She was an Italian woman who was a farmer's wife, so she was cooking 3 meals a day, and she was an incredible cook. So we'd already had a beautiful meal, and then it was finished with a beautiful meal of conversation. And, yeah, like I said, my younger brother would have been there too sometimes. He loved dining in on those chats. But it was would always probably be me and her and I left at the very end. So, yeah, that's what comes to mind. And then my mother and I also have a beautiful relationship of conversation that she and her mother had naturally as well. So I feel like there's a lineage of deep, soulful chats that come between my grandmother, my mother, and myself. And there is always this unwillingness to leave the table when we're in flow in those conversations. She's not well at the moment, so I don't unfortunately still get to experience them with her, but with my mother certainly. And you know, that spark of what I felt as a child with her. Oh, I wish it happened more, but when I do feel it in conversation with friends or with even a stranger, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's right. You know, I'm back in flow with this rich wellspring that I know as a child. So I feel like that's sometimes what I'm living for, you know, to reach those places again of humor and connection and familiarity and comfort and learning. I'm sure there was so much growth and learning as a child. And then when I think about that as being such a pivotal moment, those conversations around her dinner table and the work I'm doing now, the connection that I make to the work I'm doing now, it sometimes blows my mind that, you know, right now as the editor of Dumbo Feather, my work is to have long-form conversations with people who are doing extraordinary work in the world, you know, and who are always up for a deep and meaningful chat. And that doesn't mean that I'm always reaching the places that I reach with her, but I get to practice that, you know, quite often in my job. And when I do with the people that I'm interviewing, it's quite miraculous. So it's such a gift that she gave me. And I think it's really put me in good stead for the career that I'm creating for myself. So thank you for that question. I knew that there was a connection between the work and her, but I hadn't actually thought about it as those conversations around the dinner table. So thanks for prompting that beautiful memory.
Oh, it is. It is so beautiful, so sacred. How do you think being heard in such a deep way as a child impacted on you?
I was about to edit myself. I'm just going to say I've always felt incredibly safe and supported in the world. I know that comes with enormous privilege, you know, who I am in this body and who I am on this in this country. So there are contextual factors to why I feel safe. But I also received so much love in those conversations. And like you say, being heard, such a powerful force that someone was there with very open ears listening to me. And I've continued to have that in my life, as I said, with my mother as well, and to an extent my brothers and some other family members. That feeling of being received and being heard without judgment. Potentially sometimes there was judgment and there was probably some feeling that I needed to edit some things of what I was saying. But nonetheless, it was always a very loving place that she opened those conversations with and was willing to hear me. So it all I can think of is that it has made me feel incredibly safe and supported in this world and desirous to continue to enter conversations in that way. Sorry, I'm doing. I'm going back and forth in my thoughts.
Well, we've cracked open just such a, I guess, one of your origin stories of listening. So I imagine there's your heart's bursting and your mind's like drawing all these connections. Yeah, it is.
Every year in my every year of school that I have, I'm like, I'm not going to do that to her. What am I doing? It's funny. It is a big place that you started from.
tell us what it's sparking for you.
Oh, I mean, I didn't even know. I was just about to go down a rabbit hole of what it might have been, what effect it might have had on me as a child. I don't know. I'm not going to share it because I'm not quite sure if it's relevant, but it was powerful. All of this is to say it was a powerful time. And to be heard. And, you know, one of my favorite one of my favorite ideas, quotes around listening, it comes from Parker Palmer. It is the role of listening, the work of listening is to hear someone else into speech. And I've always loved that. And I've always felt that to be deeply true in my life, that a good listener, I don't even like saying a good listener, you know, a listener is someone who is so present that the person speaking is saying something, sharing one of their truths, just like you enabled from me in this moment, that we are listening one another into speech and into truth. It's such a beautiful gift that we can give each other. And so I'm really conscious of that when I'm in conversation with friends and when I'm obviously in conversation for my work. How can I give the gift that my grandmother gave me to the people that I'm in conversation with, that I'm not letting my own thoughts, my own stories kind of come bubble up into my head. Actually, they do. Of course they do when we're hearing someone else talk. Our stories come up, but I'm not, I'm just kind of seeing them come up and then watching them float away. You know, it's a mindfulness technique, letting the stories pass by so that I can continue to come back to the presence of what this person is sharing with me. And flow with that consciousness. I think that enables the person to speak more and more of their truth, because they're not affected. You know, it's not me trying to butt in with my own interpretations and how I think the story might be going or should be going. You know, we have such an urge to do that in our conversations, but we're doing the work of listening.
Yes. That's beautiful, that idea that we are listening people into speech and truth. Yeah. I think that when we do truly listen, it helps people connect to their own truth, because we hold that space for them to encounter it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big stuff, right?
It's huge.
And yet we are so flippant in the way that we have conversations we should be lightly and joyously having conversations with one another and not always having to bring an earnest framing to it. But I think it's just the culture that we have now, that we are scraping the surface in the stories that we're telling and the way that we're conversing with one another, and we haven't got the space for that deeper layer of meaning making, of, you know, I'm telling the story of what happened on my weekend in a kind of glittery way, but I'm not actually connecting dots and saying, oh, well, what does that actually say about who I am and where I'm coming from, and where's the meaning making layer of the things that we're doing? So we've kind of lost touch with that, and I think that's why we're having conversations now about listening, because we want to help each other get back to that juicier place.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of healing comes from. And it's a lot of that feeling of safety that I was talking about before. I think a lot of that comes from there, when we're able to access those deeper places. And to access that loving part of ourselves. So, yes, I think it's important work. It's important work that we have to do at the moment. But I hope it's not always work. I hope that it's just the way that we're naturally conversing with one another, and we don't have to think about, am I being a good listener right now? Because we are.
Yes. It's part of our way of being.
Yeah.
But I would love what you just touched on about healing. What do you think the role of listening is in healing?
So there is so much noise, right? There are so many distractions. There is so much junk food. And I don't mean literally food. There's a lot of junk food, but there is so much junk consumption available to us, trying to grab our attention. That we are busy minds, busy bodies, a busy world, And we are so used to receiving that busyness and that noise that we are now kind of throwing it back. So we are kind of existing on that plane. Sometimes, often there is a way that we interact with one another that often there is a way that we are interacting with one another that also exists on that plane. So we are not really we are asking the questions, how are you, da-da-da, what did you do, these kind of questions, but we're not really connecting with what is being said. And so I'm sure that does something to our spirit when we are communicating but not really embodying or receiving what one another is saying, that we are just kind of putting more noise out into the world, and we're not reaching that place of connection, which is what listening is all about. When we do, when we make space for it, when you hold remarkable conversations like you're holding now, it helps us access that place of connection, of flow with ourselves, flow with another person. As I said, I wish I was in dialogue with you right now so we could keep going and talking, and I could be asking you questions, but so that there's that you could, but what you're inviting is a connection with myself, which is beautiful as well. But it's in that place of connection that the healing comes. Healing is in connection, not disconnection. The noise disconnects us, the noise separates us, the anxious, hasty chats that we're having continues to disconnect us. We're having those anxious chats because we're feeling disconnected, and yet then we're communicating in a way that is disconnecting us further. So we're getting further and further away from source, from our truths, from that loving place. That the only way back is through listening. And I just feel that that is the relationship between healing. It's about connection. It's about... and just feeling like things have become, we are dismembered and we are remembered. We are embodied, re-embodied through that process. Yeah, there's something in dismembered and remembered, remembering ourselves through conversation. I mean, just like I'm remembering myself as a little boy, you know, that's what conversation does. It helps us remember true those places in us.
Mm. I'm keen to hear a bit more about healing, and maybe when there's been a time where you felt healed by being listened to in your life.
I'm going to share a story which is about being listened to by the land, and probably not quite where I don't know what you were hoping for, so I'm not going to suggest that. But anyway, it's not a conversation that I've had with a person. But I had a really, really challenging time in my life about 6 or 7 years ago when, in fact, my grandmother, became very unwell. She got a brain tumor, and it was a very difficult time in our family and for me, kind of seeing the loss of her spirit and mental health, which also happened to coincide with a very challenging time for me personally, professionally. My work was suffering. I'm not saying that they were related, but these things were all happening at this moment. So my work was suffering. I was feeling very alone in the world. I was, as we were talking about earlier, when you're in the darkness and you can't often see that you're in the darkness, you tend to isolate yourself more and more. And so that's what I was doing. I wasn't reaching for help. I was disconnecting from friends. I was seeing everyone as against me. And so I was on my own. And then I just so happened to have booked a trip. I probably booked this trip a year before to walk a part of the Camino to Santiago de Compostela in northwest Spain. And, when I booked it, I was probably on the verge of this difficult period, but I wasn't deep in it. So I had no idea how incredibly healing that walk would be. So I went off on this trip in my very scattered thinking I was fine, but definitely in hindsight was not fine place, and went on this walk. And for the first week I was not present to these remarkable landscapes that I was witnessing. I was walking north of Porto in Portugal to Santiago de Compostela, and I was on my phone, and, you know, I was in an unhealthy place, so I was just doing it, but I was on my phone, I was checking things, I was kind of in that rattled, noisy space. And then, you know, a week passes and I start to come into rhythm with my surroundings and with my body, and then the phone drops, the listening to self begins, but most powerfully the listening to land begins, and I start to pay attention to really what my surroundings are and what this environment is. And I just remember stopping and sitting by this little creek for, it must have been 3 hours, just completely absorbed in that moment, and then coming up over hills and just being blown away by some of the mountains that I was witnessing, and just this incredibly awe-inspiring response to nature that I hadn't experienced before in my life. And I remember having this, so as I was just very naturally becoming absorbed into the landscape and away from the technology and the busyness of my world, you know, none of this was contrived. It wasn't like, I have to go on this walk, I have to pay attention to this creek to heal myself. These are things that were just very naturally happening through the power of that landscape and that walk. And in that process, I reached a point probably in my third or fourth week, you know, things are starting to unlock in my mind. I'm starting to feel a bit more free in my thoughts. I start to have a clearer idea of what I need to be doing in that moment. And I just, and then, you know, I'm thinking, oh, you know, okay, so I'm thinking about what I'm doing with my life and what's going on. And then I had this really incredible moment where I was looking out over one of the mountains into these beautiful valleys, and I really heard the land speak to me in that moment. And it was telling me in its own way, it wasn't using words, but it was telling me that you are held and you are supported, and it doesn't matter how much strife you are in. We've got you. You've got us. We've got you. And it was a reciprocal relationship. I felt that I also had an obligation to that land. That wasn't even my land, obviously, but it was land nonetheless. And that in return, it was there for me. And it was the most freeing experience that I've ever had, the most freeing conversation that I've ever had. And then from there, I just, the conversations just become more and more alive. The chemistry between plants and trees that continued on the remainder of that walk, it became very animated, and I really understood, you know, what it meant to be in conversation with nature. And I'm so grateful for that experience, because I'm continually reminded of it now, whether I'm in the garden or we just went for a hike out in Warburton into the mountains last weekend. And I'm reminded of that place where conversation between myself and the other living world is possible. And sometimes I don't get there, but I had an experience so that I know that it is there when I'm truly in a deep listening state. So yeah, that's what it's about. Healing wasn't obviously, that was remarkably healing. I came back and a lot of things changed in my life after that walk. And after that realization that not only that the land was holding me, but also that I could have a conversation with the land, that the land was always listening, and that I had a role to play in listening to the land as well. And it, It's just helped me shape my life in a particular way and move through the world in a particular way where I feel like everything I'm doing is for the land, you know, it's for gratitude for the land. It's the considerations I make are with the land, front of mind, as much as I can be. Not always, I'm not perfect, but it comes. Yeah. When I'm reminded of it, it's there. So,
thank you so much for sharing. It's such a precious moment of your life with us. And I'm so struck by your words of what the land spoke to you. If you are held, you are supported, we've got you, you've got us. And it's so, so beautiful. Yeah,
and it came at such a potent time in my life. I mean, I'm eternally grateful for that experience and for who knows? Are we all blessed with those moments in our lives? I'm not sure. I'd like to think that we all are. But I feel very lucky that I had it.
It's a
continual source for me.
Yeah. So how's that flowed into your life as you came home and began to engage with the land differently?
Yeah. So, I mean, in a very practical sense, it just meant the environmental changes that we are encouraged to make seemed there was a different framing for them almost. So the not driving a car, the not using disposable coffee cups, the planting some seeds in the soil, all of those didn't feel like things I had to do to save the planet. You know, there is that kind of environmentalist mentality, which I think is really important for it resonates for some people, and it did for me for a period. And instead what shifted for me is like this is just a way of living a bit closer to the land, not consuming as much, not buying as much. It was a way of being with the land. It was about the relationship that I wasn't doing it. Like I said, I wasn't doing it to give us another decade or whatever it is, or to feel okay when I died. You know, it's all right. I didn't contribute to greenhouse gases. It wasn't that ego kind of thinking or framing for why we make environmental decisions. It really just felt like the way I needed to be living if I was, and I'm obviously not, I'm saying this in a very romantic sense. This is the idea that I have. I still live in a house with consumer goods, and it's not a wild way of living in any sense. but I have an ideal. I can see the promise of it and the opportunity of it. And I want to keep leaning into that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the naming of ego within that response that you shifted out of, like from that listening experience, you shifted away from an ego response to, I suppose, an embodied response or a response in relationship to the land. And I really feel that when I listen to your interviews or read your conversations in Dumbo Feather, just such an absence of ego in how you listen. And I'd love to hear more about how you bring yourself into that place.
I don't quite know how to answer that. It's not something I do. I don't do anything to come into that place. I don't believe I have an absence of ego. I do believe it is quieter than a lot of people, and that is a gift that I see it as a gift, a strength that I have. It also is, you know, ego is there for a reason. It also means that I'm not moving in certain ways in my life that I could be. Is that the right framing? Sorry. And ego helps us to charge through life, right? It helps us to very confidently. And this is why I'm doing a lot of back and forth, is my thinking. So we need it. We need it to an extent. And I don't believe we always need it in conversation. I don't believe it's a great tool for the listening role. So I guess your question was around what I do to get to that place. Like I said, I think it's something that is quite natural in my particular personality, in my makeup. I am by nature a very internal processing person, introverted. I don't believe that those things necessarily also mean that the ego isn't there. But it is easy for me to access that place, particularly in a conversation where I really want to listen and learn to give that gift that we were talking about at the start of the conversation of hearing someone into truth. I really always want to achieve that in the conversations that I'm having. I'm so grateful to the work that I do. Obviously, it's shaped so much of who I am over the past 7 years, and it's continued to inspire me and expand me. And I think I'll continue to receive from this work in many decades to come. So I want to honor the work by continuing to approach those conversations from that place. And
yeah, beautiful. There's such an openness to how you enter the space, or what I'm hearing. Do you find that openness, like, what effect does it have on the conversations that you have?
Yeah, I think the reason why I'm struggling with this is because I've never thought a lot about how I hold the conversation. And this is probably something I need to work on, how I hold the conversations. Obviously, I think about the questions that I ask and those things that I mentioned before, the feeling of wanting to be inspired, of wanting to hear someone into their speech, are certainly there underscoring the conversation. But I don't think about the openness that I'm going to bring, and perhaps that's something I can start to work on, or the lack of ego that I'm going to bring. I really want to surrender into that conversation, and the questions that I ask, very much like the way you're asking, are always emerging from an impulse. So I've thought about how the interview will go, the questions that I'll ask. I know enough about this story, the person's story, that I have points that I want to engage them on. But really the goal, the best parts of those conversations come when I am struck from that, I'm holding my gut, that gut place now, that instinctive pace in us. I'm like, oh, something's coming up and flowing through, and that's the question that needs to be asked at that time. So I always want to make space. I don't do anything to make space. I want to. So now I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to do some practice before I engage in some of these conversations to open up that flow. But yeah, that's the ideal, is that I'm so present to them that the questions are kind of flowing through, and it's not about my ego interfering with their particular sharing.
Yeah.
And these things come, I have to stress that these things do come quite naturally to me. So I'm trying to unpack how someone who wouldn't naturally have those conversations might be able to do it. And I know that's kind of what you're inviting me to say, inviting me to share. So there are certainly tools and things that we can build and cultivate in ourselves to do that well.
But as I listen, what I'm hearing is less about the tools that we can cultivate and more just an invitation to lean into what lights you up with listening.
Yeah, beautiful. That's a great way. Yeah, summarizing what I what I go into those conversations with. Like, where am I going to be struck?
And I can just picture your, you know, kitchen table in your grandma's house and her having that same feeling when she asks a question that just cracked you and your brother open, and just that sense of, yes, I just heard them into truth.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that same longing that's there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for reflecting that back. That's helpful. I'm like, what are the techniques and tools? But yeah, it's a quality of attention and a quality of presence and really a desire to reach those places, those instinctual places within us.
And it's a beautiful listening way, and I just honor and celebrate it. And I think there's an invitation, or the question I'm left with is, what lights me up when I listen to people, and how can I seek that out in how I listen to others?
That's a wonderful kind of guiding question, because I think what often we'll find is that it's questions that invite the personal, the vulnerable, that invite the authentic, that is the sharing of a particular story from your childhood, right? I mean, you can't really hide from that question or pat it. I mean, and nor would you want to. Yes, you would want. There are obviously some situations where you would want to, but certainly there is situations where you don't want to disclose, but it's a very honest question that invites an honest answer if you feel safe in that moment. They're the places that we go to that I like to go to in my interviews. And obviously Dumbo Further, you know, but particularly at the moment, we're exploring themes a lot more heavily, and we're exploring ideas, and we're really listening to the moment and what's happening in the world and trying to respond to them. So there is a sense that there's a feeling that some of the conversations are more in the idea space than in that personal storytelling space. And I hope that we can return there or just kind of dance between the two a little bit more. But I feel like this moment is asking us to really wrestle with some big ideas and questions. Mm-hmm. So that's why we are putting out issues like our evolutionary moment, or the most recent one is on truth. And, you know, there are things in the culture that need to be reckoned with. So, there is a slightly different way of conversing that we're having. When we are able to meet those bigger topics and themes with the sharing of something personal, when we're able to ask a question that kind of does both, that's when you really get something quite wonderful and is the most useful for us as readers as well, and for listeners of conversations, when the personal becomes universal. What is the beautiful Cheryl Strayed quote? She says, when we are speaking with the truest, most intimate voice, we are speaking with the universal voice, which I love. So
beautiful.
It's the smallest parts of ourselves, the most nuanced, most personal, they're the ones where we really connect with each other. They're the ones where we reach the universe.
That's beautiful. It's interesting, just before you shared about the shift in really listening to and responding to our times, I was thinking about the thread of conversation that we've had around safety and the role of safety in listening. And when you reflected on, you know, the direction Dumbo Feather is in this season, it feels like you're really responding to the unsafety of our times and inviting us into safety.
Yeah, wow. What a wonderful response. And I think that is very true. I hadn't thought of it like that. But we always want to be a safe place for anyone to access in a community, a kind of body of work of listening and reading that people do feel safe, that they can hear themselves, maybe not in every conversation, but in, you know, one small part of the conversation, and that they feel that same feeling that I felt when I was doing that walk in the Camino, you know, they feel held. Mm. That, these are big things that we're grappling with at the moment, and we can easily spiral into feelings of aloneness and darkness. So let's put up our floats and try and bring people together and get as many people on the life rafts as we can, you know.
Yeah. Such important work.
Yeah. It is. It's, you know, I'm continually in awe of Barry and Danny, the kind of the founders of Small Giants and of Dumbo Feather, and their relentless kind of exhaustive mission to create these platforms and these communities and these opportunities for us to feel safe. I mean, I hadn't even thought of that framing, so I'm really grateful for that. But yes, to feel safe, to connect with one another, to be reminded of our humanity, our common humanity, to come together, because there aren't enough places where we can do that, where we can be seen for who we are and then see one another for who one another are. So,
Beautiful.
More of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the way that you use listening to bring that about is such a gift.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I have one more question that I ask each of the guests on the podcast, and that is, what do you think is your listening way? So for some people, it might be listening through presence or listening through joy. What do you think your listening way is?
Yeah, listening through presence definitely strikes a chord. I listen without a lot of words. Some people use a lot of words when they listen. Silence is a space in which I feel comfortable and which I think other people in my silence feel comfortable. Mm. I am more and more listening with an intentional energy, which is going to start to sound a bit woo-woo, but I'm just going to lean into that because I feel like it's better than the stories that come into my head. So there are stories and then there are feelings, there are energies that we can play with. And I think, so say I'm having a conversation even with a friend and, you know, there's judgments coming through and I'm, oh, she's just said that or he just said that. I better put this in there to shift that train of thought. Hang on, like, get that out of the way. What is a loving energy that I can start to bring in here? Something that I'm feeling that will transpire to this other person and they can do, and if they feel it, they feel it. If they don't, they don't, that's okay. But that shift, that energetic shift that I feel when I'm in that moment, I feel it physically. And I, you know, I don't need to pay much attention to whether it changes the conversation or not, but I just feel like that is something that I can give to the conversation.
Yeah,
sometimes, and I think it's always needed, but it's just something that I'm starting to think about a bit. So it's another, yeah, it's another way of saying presence. And I'm going to say longing as well, to come back to that initial question you asked, and that took me straight back to that dinner table. It's a longing to return to those depths of conversation and flow of conversation and ease of conversation. Where we're both or whoever, however many people are in the kind of conversation, are really feeling deeply connected and deeply loved and deeply safe, so that we can then have a couple of really great laughs and we can leave that conversation feeling full in our hearts and like we've just found a couple more people in the world.
Yes. That's beautiful. I think I could see as you were reflecting, I could see you in your head and then you just dropped into your memory or your embodied, you know, way of being. Mm. And just that naming of your listening way as a longing to return to the depths. to connect. Yeah, that's beautiful. So for anyone that is, and I know we said it's, you know, there's not necessarily tools or anything, but it is your embodied way. But if somebody's wanting to play with this way of listening, or if they resonate with that part of themselves, but it's been dormant, how might they tend to that or draw that out of themselves? Mm. Is there any practical things they could do to begin to play with that listening way?
Yeah, I very briefly mentioned mindfulness before, but I think it really is everything, isn't it? Mindfulness and meditation to help us to have more control over the thoughts and the stories that come up into our head, because as long as they're there, the presence isn't going to be there. So practicing an ability just to let those thoughts come and then to watch them leave the mind and return to what is truly happening in that moment is a life-giving tool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's all I've got.
Yeah, and that is more than enough.
Great, thanks.
Absolutely more than enough. It's just wonderful.
Thanks, Dusk.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. That.
If you resonated with Nathan's listening way, you can explore his work at dumbofeather.com or at smallgiants.com.au. You can read beautiful conversations and check out their upcoming program, Storytelling for Change. And I've shared this all in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to explore your listening way, we are curating a downloadable resource that brings together the wisdom from all the guests in this season. You can find it through our website, thelisteningsquad.com/podcast. If this conversation has resonated with you, you can find out more about our work at The Listening Squad, where we hold circles, programs, and strategic retreats. You can also find me at The Listening Mama, where we hold matrescent circles, programs, and sessions. We love hearing your reflections too, so feel free to message us on Instagram at The Listening Squad. We dream of a listening revolution where every person is heard. So how could you listen to yourself or someone today through your listening way?